Hello, here is your KVNF regional newscast for Friday, January 5th. The Colorado Legislature will open its 71st session on January 10th. Capitol Coverage interviewed lawmakers on the eve of opening day. In yesterday's interview, we heard from House Minority Leader Patrick Neville. In today's third interview, State House reporter Benta Berkland talks with Senate President Kevin Grantham.
We're heading into your final legislative session as Senate President. Talk about some of your priorities.
Transportation is going to be key again to see what we can get done, try to get through a split legislature where we can come up with the funding necessary to bond money to get some of the big projects done. So that'll be another battle that we'll have this year. And there's a good chance, given some of the information that we got from the revenue forecast, some extra cash, so to speak.
How big of a bond do you think you could get, or would that be part of the discussion?
The more the better, so that we can bond a bigger amount so we can take care of more projects over the next 10 to 15 years would be ideal. Some of the other issues that we have are going to be para reform. It looks like we finally have some pliability on those that have been reticent to our call for change in how para is structured. So we're seeing some movement from the para board itself. We're seeing movement from the governor's office and some options there that may not have been available for us in recent years.
How optimistic are you on moving the ball on some of these big issues when we are going into an election year?
You know, that's always going to be a factor that remains unknown until we're in the middle of those negotiations. The issues that present themselves are bigger than the election. And I think we see a recognition from all factors that we need to get something done. To answer your question, I am actually optimistic that we can get something done on each of these. Fact remains, we have to actually get it done. We'll see how that plays out within the internal politics.
The special session the governor called was not successful. That issue is still out there trying to fix that expansive bill, Senate Bill 267. Talk about that issue, and is it going to get resolved this session?
I have a sense that the special session issue when it comes to the sales tax and the marijuana tax will be resolved fairly early on within the session. The time that we've allotted ourselves since the special session was the time necessary to look at all sides of the issue instead of the rush to fix when we didn't know all the factors, and I think we probably found a solution that will work for everybody.
One thing we didn't anticipate, the sexual harassment allegations, and we have several formal complaints. There's more reporting to do on that issue as well. How is that going to play into the session?
We don't know how things are going to play out as far as the issues and the politics, but we have set things in motion with the Executive Committee of the Legislative Council. Our meeting recently put in place the Human Resources Officer and put in place the third party to come in and analyze policy. I think we set things in motion in a bipartisan fashion that will help us move down the road.
Some people say we need more transparency, and then others are also concerned about legislative leaders being the people that have to know about formal complaints.
That's a factor that is unique because of our situation as a legislative body. So hopefully we can have the third party analysis come in and give us a good idea of how that nuance fits within the scope of government work.
How about the idea of more transparency?
In trying to protect the accuser and the accused, how would that play out in the real world? We want to make sure we try to protect reputations on both sides. There is going to be, has to be some level of transparency, but that's a tough one to tackle.
What other policy issues do you want to highlight?
We might be tackling rural broadband, a revamp and a repurposing, a new mission, so to speak, for the energy office. Get rid of some dead weight and statute, move forward on something that all of us can support, Republicans and Democrats. Well, all of these I'd like to try to get out there as quick as we can in the session so that it doesn't become an issue later on. If we look at where we've been the last couple of years in this split legislature, you know, I think we have a pattern of success of working with the other side. We've seen an extraordinary number of bills passed bipartisanly, getting to the governor. So the idea of gridlock may be something that's familiar to the East Coast and to D.C. It's something that's a foreign concept here.
That's all we have time for. Thanks for talking to us.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
That was Republican Senate President Kevin Grantham. I'm Benta Berkland in Denver.
Pressure from special interest groups is keeping animals which should be listed as endangered off the protected list. The greater sage grouse and the wolverine are two such species that live in Colorado. Eric Galatis filed this story about new research indicating that special interest groups are riding wildlife policy.
Pressure from special interests is undermining policy decisions about wildlife conservation, according to a report from the Endangered Species Coalition. And the report says that influence is getting stronger as industry officials have taken leadership positions in the Trump administration. Haley Hawkins with the coalition says the Endangered Species Act mandates that the best available science be tapped to help preserve wildlife and plant species.
And unfortunately, as we see in our report, that's not what's always happening. Our decision makers are caving to politically powerful special interests to the detriment of endangered species, conservation, and the American people.
The report analyzes conservation decisions on 10 imperiled fish, plant, and wildlife species over the past decade, spanning the Obama and Bush administrations. It says science was either ignored or suppressed as a result of special interest lobbying. Four species in the report, including the wolverine and greater sage grouse in Colorado, were denied protections despite large-scale population declines. Hawkins notes the oil and gas industry, along with snowmobile companies, played a big role in keeping the wolverine off the endangered species list.
Wolverines depend on alpine habitat for their survival, and loss of habitat due to climate change is their main threat. These habitats are melting.
A decade-long habitat conservation effort across 11 states led the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to not list the iconic greater sage grouse, despite a 90% population loss from historic levels. In November, U.S. Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke recommended changes to the land management plan that could open up large portions of the bird's habitat to oil and gas development. This is Eric Galatis reporting for the Colorado News Connection.
And finally, the first official forecast for the amount of water expected to be in the Colorado River this spring is in. And as Luke Runyon from KUNC reports, the outlook is grim.
The Colorado River and its tributaries are mostly fed by layers of snow high up in the mountains of Colorado, Wyoming, and Utah. And this winter is off to a desperately dry start.
Well, it's not looking really great at this point.
Greg Smith is a hydrologist with the Colorado Basin River Forecast Center in Salt Lake City, Utah.
And the forecasts have dropped off quite dramatically. We have several areas where we're forecasting actually below 50% of average.
Meaning some major streams could have less than half their normal flow by June. But Smith cautions that it's still early and it's possible some big storms could boost mountain snowpack. I'm Luke Runyon.
And that was your KVNF regional newscast for Friday. For KVNF News, I'm Eric Gould.